My journey has been one of returning from the darkness and stepping out into the light once more. I'm Chance Lunsford. I'm also Logos Centrifugal. While you're sitting trying to figure that out,
this is my podcast.
Allegedly. Logos Centrifugal Podcast. I'm Chance Lunsford. I'm also Logos Centrifugal. Maybe you're also Logos Centrifugal. While you're trying to figure that out, let me introduce today's special guest. I have with me the man, the myth, the legend, Kurt Schlichter. Now, this is a man I came across on Twitter because, frankly, he was recommended to me for this series on war, and I went and checked out what he had done. I read some of his stuff on Town Hall. I listened to a couple of your interviews, and I really liked the humorous approach that you take to things, and I, you're very good at drawing in people who don't understand what you're doing, and the troll level is very high with you.
I gotta tell you, man, I was a stand-up comic for a while. I'm a fan of Dennis Miller. In fact, one of the highlights of my life, last Tuesday, I got to be on for with an hour with Dennis Miller, matching him, hip cultural reference for cultural reference. And I remember there was this time I was doing a bit at kind of a workshop, and I made a joke about something about the French and Jerry Lewis. And everyone's completely quiet, but you know, we had like a workshop. He cracked up, and they're like, "Why is that funny?" And I'm like, "Do French really like Jerry Lewis?" And they're like, "No." And I'm not going to conform my jokes because you don't know fucking shit. You don't know any kind of like cultural stuff. You know references. You have this narrow view. That I find funny, and either you will find them funny or I'm not going to care. So that's always kind of
I'm losing you, man. Well, I mean, the French aren't the only ones who love Jerry Lewis. While we're hopefully going to get this connection back online. Yeah, there we go. But check this out.
Yo, boom, tool shirt, massive guns.
That's what it's all about. Hopefully we can get this figured out. I know Kurt's got a tri-tip that he's got to... He's got to let breathe a little bit. So hopefully he'll be back after he pulls that out of there. If not, it was a really nice like minute of conversation. Welcome back.
Look at that. Just as I was, where was I? I was at Jerry Lewis. Anyway, I make jokes for myself. And that's how I do Twitter. And a lot of people don't get it. And I don't care. Because why would I? There are a lot of people who find what I do amusing. That's nice. So I just kind of do my own thing. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to have people respond. But the whole world is out there to talk about. So I gotta talk about
it. Yeah, and look, not for nothing, but filters are important. You put something out there and people get butthurt about it or they get confused about it. It's like, okay, well, I know which kind of box to put you in intellectually or politically or whatever. It's like, okay, well, thanks for letting me know that I don't want to have anything to do with you. That's perfect.
Well, look, if they don't, they don't. And a lot of people don't. A lot of people do. It is weird how we've niched as a society. You know, this wasn't, you know, look, you're young, I'm ancient, I'm going to die soon. And I remember when there were three channels and like Channel 44, KBHK, which would show like Attack of the Giant Leeches and shit. And you know, you couldn't niche. There was no niche. Now everything has become a niche. I mean, you look at late night TV, and if they get 2 million viewers, they're a big hit. And Johnny Carson had like 30. And everybody watching, everyone talked about the next year what Johnny said last night. It was hilarious. And he was a funny motherfucker. Hope I can swear. And yeah. Okay. But now, you know, I'm watching, I mean, there are late night hosts I've never even heard of. There's, there was one I just heard of the other day. I'm like, who's that? And, you know, I never heard of her and probably don't want to. I saw a bit of her. She's not funny. And, but you can become a niche and you don't have to expand. You don't have to reach out. I don't want to be a crossover. I don't want to reach out. I'd rather just do my own thing. I would never have a place in the three network world.
Yeah. Okay. And
you wouldn't have a place at all, man.
No. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't. I mean, I'm, I'm a very special case. I'm very niche. So look, man, I brought you on because, this is a war series I'm working on, and you have experience in the military, and you're also involved in this culture war that, you know, this sort of information warfare that's going on, and deeply so. Your stuff on Town Hall, the interviews I've seen, the tweets, it's all combative for the most part. And I guess I wonder what is it within you that makes you ready to go to battle, whether it's within the army or whether it's within this culture war that's going on? Why are you the guy who's ready to punch?
Well, look, if you're looking for Audie Murphy, I'm no Pete Buttigieg. I ran a heavily armed car wash in Desert Storm, and I was civil affairs in Kosovo on my second deployment. I accomplished all my missions. My guys always came back, and I'm very proud of what they all did. I am no war hero. I've never shot anybody. I don't have a combat infantry badge. So I don't want to put myself out there as super NAM tier one guy. I'm a guy who got missions and did them, and I think I did them well. I did it well enough that I got promoted ahead of my peers. I was still in the area, so I think I have some expertise. As far as being combative and liking to fight, I've always liked to fight. I always like conflict. I always like competition, I think, is the best way to put it. I'm always interested in being the best. I always want to be the funniest guy. I always want to be the guy who wins. That's just who I am. I hope it doesn't make me into a giant jerk. I don't see competition as a zero-sum game. I win and you lose. I see I win, and if you win too, that's cool with me. It's not maybe I'm unusual. I don't necessarily focus on the other side being crushed and, you know, the lamentations of the women and stuff. I would much rather win, but I like being around other winners, you know? I mean, I like being around other people who are doing what they want to do. Obviously, that doesn't count so much in court. There I want to be the winner and I want the other side to be the loser. But I think when you're talking about the whole conservative world, I have a lot of friends who are successful in their own way. I mean, we're not exactly backbiting. I do like to beat the liberals because they're terrible and their ideology is poisonous.
Yeah. And that's, you have some experience seeing the aftermath, or the sort of end game of a lot of the thinking that is central to the sort of liberal or leftist agenda. Yeah. And, it makes sense to me that that would sort of get you to a place where you felt like you really needed to fight against that because you've seen what actually becomes of it. And I think a lot of the whitewashing, or a lot of the misdirection or a lot of the sort of circumventing the consequences of this sort of collectivist ideology makes it easier for people to sort of tack on to the idea that this is going to be good for them, or that is going to be good long term, or that this is sort of the moral or compassionate thing to do. And for me, I'm a radical personal sovereignty advocate, is what I like to say. It's you take responsibility for yourself, you take the consequences for yourself, and you should help the people that you care about and everything. But it's like, that sort of seems self-evident to me. It's like, this is how life works. And I've run into a number of instances in my own life where I've lost friends or, relationships have gone sour, friends, family, everything, because it's like, what you're saying is bullshit. And I can show you a million reasons why that is, but you're not going to listen to me because you've got this sort of possession of the mind that's taking place here. And I guess I wonder, you throw a lot of punches, man, but do you see that that's making a difference with your, do you feel like you're swaying minds, or do you feel like you're sort of just reinforcing the people who already agree with you?
Well, look, both are important. I think morale is an absolutely under-important component of any movement. And one of the great things about guys, leaders in our movement, like Reagan, Limbaugh, Breitbart, was how they preached to the choir. Choir needs to be preached to, too. I am not out there converting many people. I mean, there are people who go, well, you know, I didn't think of this before, but thank you, Kurt, you brought me around. That's not really what I'm doing. I'm trying to get the guys to rise, my own guys who are already there, to fix bayonets, rise up out of the trenches and charge across no man's land. That's a lot different than going and recruiting a bunch of new soldiers and training them up. So, and I mean, each job is important. I just do the one that I do. So if people go, you're preaching to the choir, I'm like, yeah. You seem to think that that leads to a conclusion. What is your conclusion about that? It's very important. You know, conservatives have been victims of terrible morale because watching their leaders flail. And I know what it's like to have bad leaders. Most of my leaders are pretty good, which makes bad ones stand out. And you know, there's just this feeling of dread and misery when you have a bad leader who you know is going to make bad decisions. And you know you're not going to win. It's exactly the opposite when, you know, things are firing on all cylinders, your leaders are smart, they're capable, and they're going to fight, and they're going to fight for you. I mean, 2012, Mitt Romney, this guy turned into a little bitch on stage by Candy Crowley. I mean, how does that happen? And then Donald Trump, who I was not a supporter of initially, comes along and completely turns that paradigm around, 180 degrees.
And I guess that makes sense. You know, there's diplomats, there's recruiters, there's field commanders, and all those things are necessary for sort of the victory to be attained.
Yeah, everybody's got a role. And mine is just, I stir up our folks. They a lot of times I'll get a DM, direct message on Twitter or something, and somebody's saying, you know, I thought the same thing, but I didn't know how to put it into words. And I'm pretty good at putting things into words. I think everybody should do it for themselves, they, you know, if they can. But I'm pretty good at it, and I like when people say that. It means it's working. It means I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm taking my talents and using them in my fight, the fight for personal liberty, the fight for respect for human rights, which are natural rights. And I like that. I mean, I don't see a difference between the oath I took defending the military and what I do, defending the country and the Constitution, and what I do now. I think it's all part of the same fight. It's just different focus.
So I'm curious, was there a point in your life or a point in your career, or was there a specific maybe time or instance where all this stuff really sort of concretized inside of you where you said, man, I've seen this shit and it's so dark. I know that I have to commit myself to walking this path now. Like you just said that what you're doing now you see is no different than what you're doing within the armed forces. And I guess I wonder, was there a specific instance or a specific period of time where you realized, oh, this sort of cultural thing and this speaking and this writing thing that I'm doing, or I need to do that?
Not really, because I always kind of did it. I mean, I've been writing conservative stuff since the mid-80s. Certainly going to Kosovo, even more than the Gulf. You know, going to Kosovo and seeing the remnants of a socialist society, seeing the remnants of an attempted genocide, you know, and I'd walk through the ruined villages. And, you know, what I had always known, well, there it is. It's right in front of me. Now, I married a Cuban immigrant. She escaped from Cuba. Her family members got, you know, locked up for decades by Castro. So I kind of understood it on an intellectual level. And then walking through and physically being there where this kind of evil ideologically driven evil occurred. I think that does give you kind of a focus. Hey, I want you to give me 2 minutes. I gotta go take a tri-tip out. Hold on.
Welcome back.
I'm back, and I got a glass of wine.
All right.
Tri-tip is out on the table, just kind of getting ready.
I'm going to tell Posobiec you're wearing cargo shorts.
And drinking wine.
And drinking wine.
Yeah. So I like Posobiec, but nobody tells me what to do. He's not the boss of me. I like that guy, though. He's an entrepreneur.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
I've had a number of people give me shit because I'm friends with him. And it's like, I look at them and why do you think I would allow you to tell me who I can be friends with? I mean, if you're going to tell me he's like a secret Nazi and you've got like some evidence, that would be an interesting take, but that's never going to happen. So why would people do that? It's like high school. You can't be friends with so-and-so. Well, yeah, I can. It's just bizarre. Adults act like such idiots in this whole politically correct environment.
Yeah, I mean, he's always been very kind to me and very loyal, and that's what I measure by, because the news is bullshit. And so
the news is total bullshit.
Yeah. So you gotta measure your I guess personal responses and how you personally interact with the person. Unless, yeah, like you said, there's some sort of crazy business.
Yeah, my thing is, and I kind of like to say it, I'm going to do whatever I want all the time. And if you want to stop me. You can. See how that goes. You know? Too many people care, Chance. Too many people care what other people say. And it's not that you should listen to other people. Other people may have perspectives that you don't. They may be wise. You may be screwing up. And you should, somebody you respect says, you're screwing up. You should go, huh. But if it's some dipshit wants to give you some life lessons, tell them to go pound fucking sand. What the hell is wrong with these people? People are idiots sometimes. But they're also cool. So it's kind of a, you know, whatever.
So where do you see this going? I mean, here we are, elections rapidly approaching. It looks like a slam dunk for Donald Trump this time. I mean, I could be surprised, but there doesn't seem to be any real serious competition for him this time. And I guess I wonder, do you figure that the threat of the sort of collectivist ideology is going to be diminished anytime soon, or do you feel like it's just going to be present for quite some time, and that's going to be something that people like you are going to have to continue to fight vigorously against for the foreseeable future?
We may see something like 1972 when they nominated McGovern and he won, I think, a state, two states in D.C., and the Democrats, the next time they nominated what they considered a moderate, Jimmy Carter. It's a fight between the alleged moderates, which is Bloomberg, and Bernie Sanders, who's just now an out leftist. And I find them both intolerable. I hate socialists. It's just, you know, socialists are just communists who won't commit. It's like strippers or whores who won't freaking go all the way. I have more respect for the whores because they haven't killed 100 million innocent people. Bloomberg's interesting because he is the kind of person weak people will defer to. Yeah, take my civil rights, just give me security and some prosperity, because I think he could deliver prosperity and I think he could deliver security. But he does that at, you know, the price of disarming normal Americans. He's stupid and arrogant and ignorant enough, because he is an ignorant. He doesn't understand anybody outside his world, as his recent insights into farmers show. I mean, that wasn't me. I wasn't mad. You don't get mad because he's mean. You kind of scratch your head because it's so ignorant. I mean, Schlichter hasn't been tilling the soil since like the 30s. And I know farming is hard and requires intelligence and resources and guts and intuition and initiative in ways that almost no other profession does. Certainly none that I'm a master of, maybe the Army. So, you know, to say that, he suffers from the problem of not having anyone around him to say, "Hey, Mike, you're being stupid. Unfuck yourself." That's why the Army. That's why the Army gives you command sergeant majors when you're a colonel. I always had a guy who had as much or more experience than me who could shut the door and say, "Sir, that's a fucking mistake, and that's stupid. Don't do it." And he could do that, and that's a good thing to have if you listen to him. And you know, I listened to him, which is why I was a top level commander, and I kept getting promoted. And other people didn't listen to him because they were smart, and they made it easy for me to climb to the top of the pyramid. You know, in some ways, life sets you up for success if you just look. You know, but I don't think Bloomberg has that. I think Bloomberg has a lot of money. I think he's cynically going to buy everybody. And I think a lot of people are willing to be bought. And I think the Bernie guys are eventually have a fairly good chance of losing. And I think they will humiliate themselves by falling into line with Bloomberg, the billionaire, whose economic views, except for his, fellatio for China, is pretty much is very comparable to a mainstream conservative. Not Donald Trump. Donald Trump is more populist and more popular. It's an interesting fight, and I think the only reason they're having it is because Bloomberg's got so much money he can literally buy his way to competitiveness.
Now, you talked about how you think that he's probably out of touch and doesn't have somebody around him to say, "Hey, man, you don't have your finger on the pulse here." That's obtuse of you to say. And I guess from my perspective, I'm in Utah and I love this place. For my eyes, it's the best place that there is. But what I see is a bunch of people from California moving here now, and it pisses me off because it's like you guys fucked up your whole state, and then now you're coming here. And you're bringing your bad ideas and your bad habits with you.
Yes. And we are talking about that today. We're talking about that today. I'm one of the few conservatives still around. I mean, I literally, in my neighborhood, I have a couple conservative friends. Some of them are in hiding. I don't understand why you screw up where you are. You go someplace. It's like you shit in your own house. And you go, "God, my house smells like shit. I'm going to go next door." And then immediately you take a dump on the floor. I don't get that. But if you believe in this stuff, you're kind of stupid anyway. So, you know, California is a great place that has a suicide pact going. I like California. I came here when Reagan was governor. I was like 5 or 6. I've always loved California. I don't want to leave. And right now I'm not going to leave because California is so stupid because trial lawyers... You know, I've got endless opportunity. I can just take these guys. I mean, it's like, why are you making my life so easy by being so stupid? And I live in the blue area. You're not going to see shit on my sidewalks because our cops will come and fucking arrest you. Because it doesn't happen where I am. Because where I am is where rich people are. All right? You don't get bums here. It's not allowed. The bums are where, you know, the middle class and the poor people are. And it's a feudal system. I just happen to be a minor duke. And eventually maybe I'll get sick of it and go someplace. But, you know, you look at all the problems of California. It doesn't exist for the people in the blue bubble. My life is freaking wonderful. I got little fireworks going off and parties going on. And it's wonderful for the small minority of people who are, top flight professionals. How do I feel about it? Well, to the extent it matters how I feel about it. I feel like this is my home, so why the hell should I leave? And if you're stupid, I'm happy to take your money.
I guess my curiosity or my question to you about all this is, it does seem like, you know, the term coastal elites is thrown around a lot, but it does seem to have some bearing on a lot of what's happening.
It's very, very accurate. It's thrown around because it's absolutely accurate. Yeah. Coastal elites live on the coast because it's freaking beautiful and defensible. And, it's a real thing. And for some reason, they feel competitive. You know, if we had an elite that wasn't garbage, you know, like the generation that won World War II or the generation that put a man on the moon, I might be annoyed, but I might not complain because at least it gets stuff done. But we have I keep asking, I've actually written a book on this. What the hell has our elite done? All these people who think they're better than you and me, and all those dumb people who farm and build shit and have apps. What have our betters done that's actually better? I'm waiting. Personal computer. No, 60s and 70s. Different generation. Yeah, we just improved on it a little. That's nice. Tinder? Is that Facebook? Twitter? Are these our improvements? What has our generation done? They've given us Afghanistan, Iraq, Wall Street collapse, Obamacare, coronavirus. What have our betters done? The climate hoax, you know, let's get rid of God and have this weird weather cult. And you know, let's name as a high priestess some autistic Swedish girl, some Swedish teenager. The whole idea is ridiculous. Here, let's say it out loud. We demand that you completely upend society in a way that gives us more power and resources, which you would not give us otherwise, because we're afraid it's going to be slightly warmer in 100 years, and the person you should listen to and not respond to, who's immune from response and argument, is this angry teenage girl from Sweden who will lay it all out for you. Go! It's like, why would I do any of that? Why wouldn't I burst into laughter? So I burst into laughter. And I think a lot of other people are starting to, too. You just got to realize all people who think they're better than us are not better than us. They're much, much worse. And they deserve to be treated with the appropriate level of contempt.
Sort of a show me, don't tell me, man. Where's the proof?
If you're better than me, go be better than me. Give me a reason to follow you. If somebody's smart, I'm happy to oblige. If you've got good ideas and you've got my best interests at heart and you're going to make me prosperous and safe, and I don't care if you take a little off the top because that's what leaders do, political leaders. Hey, okay, all right, you got me. Let's see where this goes. But they don't. Instead, because they are empty inside, they don't have a religion, they're morally illiterate, you know. They have to fill it up with this bizarre leftist dogma that commands them to burn the heretics and go convert the heathens. You and I are heathens, and they presume to convert us. I'm supposed to, you know, and you're supposed to believe in magical wonders, like a man can become a woman through the power of wanting. And we're supposed to just nod. That you know, a man who's now calling himself Sue is running in a race with teenage girls. And of course he wins all the medals because he's a man, and men are bigger and run faster than women. And we're supposed to go, oh, she's a girl. Well, she's not, and she never will be. And it's stop trying to make, you know, stop Emperor's New Clothing me. And the thing is, they know he's got no clothes, but they're like, you gotta say there's clothes on this guy. Hey, there's no clothes. I know that. You know that. But you got to say it because I want to break your spirit.
Man, I had a conversation with one of my wife's friends, and she's certainly far left of where I'm at. But even she's starting to go, I don't know about some of this. And the point she brought up is she's got her daughter at a charter school, and it's like a hippy-dippy one. And in this hippy-dippy charter school, there's a gay and lesbian club. and her daughter is 12 years old. Yeah, it's 11 to 13 year olds. And she said there's like 10, 12 kids in this class. And she said, why do you think there's so many in it? And I was like, well, you tell me, because when I was 11 or 12, I mean, kids shouldn't even be thinking about these kind of things when they're just starting to figure out they got a boner. Exactly right.
You get attention.
And they're encouraged and they get attention.
It's a Baron Munchausen syndrome. It is, I'm going to become more interesting because my son Caden is now my daughter Ashley. Look at me, I'm interesting. Well, you're not interesting, you're a freak. And your poor kid is going to be traumatized. You know, there are people out there with gender dysphoria. It's a thing that exists. It's probably very painful. And the last thing you or I or anybody who thinks like us would want to do is add pain to someone who's already in pain. I don't want to do that. And if he wants to, and he thinks, look, I've got this issue. I'm going to wear a dress. If you're my friend, would you do me a favor? Would you call me Sue? Well, if he's my friend and he asked me, maybe I would. But if he said, would you say that I'm a man, a woman? I'm going to say, no, I'm not going to do that. Because I'm not going to lie for somebody. That demeans me. But if you want my compassion and you want my support, you got it. And you look at what happens with these people. And I looked at a study the other day, and the outcomes for these people who go transition are terrible. I mean, suicides, regret. How about just saying, hey, you've got a lot of feelings, man. You're confused. We're not going to cut you. I'm not going to inject you with anything. We're not going to change your name. We're just going to work through it. And everybody's going to, and we're all going to love you and treat you with respect. And together we'll get through this. And you're not alone. How about that? How about treating our people like human beings? What kind of savage says to a six-year-old, yeah, I want to cut your freaking balls off to conform to your delusion? And it's not even the kid's delusion. It's the mom's. Because it's almost always the mom.
Hey, man, it's kids. Look, when I was in school, you know, I had maybe 500 kids in the surrounding grades. Yeah. And there were probably two kids who, even then in grade school, it's like, you're for sure gay, Thomas, you know?
Yeah.
Or you're definitely
like one or two with me.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, you know, it is what it is, and who and am I to judge?
I had a couple who turned out to be gay later. I didn't know it. I mean, until I was like an adult. Oh, yeah, I'm married a dude. Oh, well, that's kind of a shock. Didn't see that twist coming. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a thing.
And now it's.
It's an attention source.
And this thing with the kids, I know we're kind of coming into the time, but you know, it's just worth repeating. When you're ruining children's lives because of this weird mental possession that you have.
Yes.
And a lot of this stuff is irreversible. It's like, you just ruined your child. You just ruined their life forever.
Yeah, they don't care. They don't care. It doesn't matter to them. Look, it's the Baron Munchausen thing. You know, the women who make their kids sick. I mean, sometimes like critically ill, and then they get to be the heroic nurses, and that gives them a purpose in their life. There's a lot of people with empty lives out there. We used to fill it up with God. We used to fill it up with country. We used to fill it up with work or a community, all combinations of that. Do we now? No. They fill it up with this weird dogma. And, you know, and they know it's bullshit. The way that you know that they know at some level it's bullshit is they can't laugh about it. I can laugh about my politics. I'll laugh about, yeah, you know, I'm smoking a cigar with a monocle because I'm a capitalist. Ha, 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 ha. They don't laugh. They don't laugh because they can't. Because they don't have the confidence in what they believe. To let down their guard even for a second is so important that they signal their solidarity. They can't possibly laugh. And you certainly can't laugh. You can't. You can't dissent. They can't tolerate dissent. I live around liberals. My law partners are all liberals. Well, at least couple of them. I don't know about the others. I don't talk about that stuff with them because that's not what we do. But, you know, the hardcore leftists cannot tolerate any kind of dissent because they are weak and they know they are weak and they know that the only way they can win is at bayonet point, whether it's literal or figurative.
So look, we've kind of we've gone here, we've gone there, we've talked about a lot of things, we've poked a lot of buttons here, and I'd never mind doing that, and you don't mind doing that either, but I always like to try to end these conversations with something that the audience can take with them and can be useful to them. And so I guess my question to you is, after all these problems that we've talked about and pointed out, and after all the things that, you know, you feel like are worth fighting for, what's the silver lining in this? And what do you think people can do to just remember that they are who they are in their lives of their own, and what can they do to add value into their own lives and make sure they're focusing on that?
Well, first thing to know is we're going to win. We are absolutely going to win. Now, I'm not going to lose because I'm too old to live as a serf, so I'll die on a pile of brass first. Don't care. No, but we're going to win because look what we're selling. We're selling human freedom, something that people have fought for, sacrificed for thousands of years, going back to ancient Romans and ancient Greeks in their own way. We are selling what people should have. We are right. We are correct. We are objectively and morally correct. We're going to win. And I think people need to understand that. It's easy to start feeling bad. You look at the news and they're telling you how you suck and you're going to lose. Now, we're going to have bad days, but we're going to win. So first of all, understand that. The second thing is figure out what you're good at and then be part of the fight. Are you good at talking to people? Well, talk to people at your church or at the supermarket or wherever. Maybe you want to get involved in politics. Maybe you want to go be a Republican county commissioner. God knows a lot of them have been there for 20 years and haven't done anything. Maybe they need some new blood. You be the new blood. Take a model, take an example from the folks in Virginia. The fascists there. And I use that term intentionally because they are fascists, wanted to take the guns from Virginia citizens. They wanted to disarm them because, of course, people who want to disarm you only want the best for you. and normal people in Virginia came back, ignored the media telling their hicks, losers, rubes, Jesus freaks, gun nuts, whatever. And they made their point known. And a number of Democratic senators said, hell no. And they tabled the assault weapons bill. We won. We win when we participate. There are more of us than there are more of the freaks. There are more people who want to live their lives, support their families, just mind their own business and be free than people who want to take our freedom, take our money, take our liberty. There just are. So, figure out what you can do. Are you going to go out and organize? Are you going to get on Twitter? Are you just going to keep yourself informed and vote all the time? You can do something. Everybody's got value. Everybody has intrinsic value. You've got value. Go do it. Look at you. You're out here doing this show. You're spreading the word this way. I like to think I'm doing it through my columns and my Twitters. Oh, dear God, help me. But everybody can do something. So figure out what you can do and then do it. None of us really, I mean, a lot. I like politics, but most people just want to live their lives. Well, right now we don't get to. Right now we live in interesting times. Too fucking bad. Ruck up, get your shit on, and let's move out. Because if we don't do it, nobody's going to do it. So let's do it. We're Americans. Fuck it. Let's rock.
Well, good, man. And just to tack on a little bit onto that, you've expressed a lot of opinions here tonight. If anybody disagrees with you, I encourage them to figure out why that is and think clearly about it and don't be afraid to present your opinions and have some dialogue. Don't just point fingers. Don't just say some shit. Write it down. Go write down what you really believe. Figure out, get some clear-headedness. And like you said, be able to laugh about it. If you can't laugh about yourself, you already lost. Because if I can piss you off every single time with just a word, the fight's over for you, man.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, look, I'm a lawyer, army officer. I always know what the enemy does. I had another lawyer goes, you know why you succeed, Kurt? You know the other guy's side better than he knows it. Well, of course. That's just instinctive. You know the enemy and how he trains and how he fights. I know liberals too, because I've been around them all my life. I've always been the minority. I know all about them, but they don't know anything about me. Yeah, you know, they don't know anything. They're like, you married a Latin immigrant? Well, why would that be surprising? I mean, I guess it would be if you believed in the stereotypes you believe in. If you didn't know anything about me or what I think or my ideology. And they don't. They really don't know anything. And it makes them weak and lazy. They can't, they've never had to argue. They've never had to argue their position. You know, the best favor these commie professors could do to them, and they never will, is to say, okay, we're going to have a debate. Everybody who's hard left, come on over here. Okay, you guys, all right, you are now going to do the conservative side. And I don't mean the stereotype conservative side. If you just come up and say, I like racism, okay, ha, ha, ha. No, you need to articulate what your opponent is going to say. And you conservatives, you're having an easy time. You just do the liberal side. And I could do it with a straight face. I know what they're going to say. I know their arguments. They don't know ours. They're weak. They're flabby. They aren't used to defending themselves. And that's why, you know, a guy like Trump comes along and motivates people who aren't otherwise motivated. Liberals are helpless to make a counter-argument. What's their counter-argument? Trump tweets mean things. Oh, Trump banged a Playboy bunny. Yeah, that's going to make me like him less. I mean, what are these people thinking? So, anyway.
Well, look, man, I've stolen a little bit more of your time than you intended to give me anyway. So I want to thank you very much for coming on the podcast and for taking the time to share your mind with the audience. Is there anything you felt was left on the table or anything else you want to say before we
continue? Oh, you and I could probably go on for a while, and I'd be happy to do it again sometime if you'll have me. If your people aren't,
absolutely.
I don't know if I'm interesting. I'm interesting to me.
I'd love to have you back.
Sure.
Well, in that case, why don't you tell people where they can find you on social media? Tell them some of the books you've put out there. There's a bunch of them. You don't need to go through the whole list, but why don't you tell them where they can find your shit?
I go find me at Kurt Schlichter on Twitter. I write columns Monday, Thursday for free on Town Hall, and then Wednesday I have a special column for the VIPs. I have two podcasts going on Salem, one affiliated with Hugh Hewitt called Fighting Words, another called Unredacted. That one's a Town Hall VIP one, so check that out. Use the promo code Kurt. I'm on lots of shows and stuff, and I enjoy that greatly. And I write books. I've got an Irwin coming out in July. It's traditional, but my novels, starting with People's Republic, about America split in two, and I've got four of them. They're out there. Liberals, Bill Kristol called them appalling. If there's any better blurb, I'd love to hear it.
I picked up the first one, so I'm looking forward to getting into that.
Okay, hope you like it. Have me on after. Let's see what you think.
Sure, man. That'll be great. Well, in that case, man, thank you again for coming on. This is a good place to end it. And I want to encourage my audience to really, I hope you listened carefully. If you didn't, go back and listen to the things and figure out how you feel about those things and write about it, talk about it. And with all that, this has been the Logos and Trivical podcast. I've been Chance Lunsford. He's been Kurt Schlichter. And this has all been Allegedly, and we're out.